Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, Episode 109. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Barbados. Learn why George Washington's only overseas journey was to this sun-drenched island.
I got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. Looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh, no.
15-hour flight, oh, I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I have two news stories for you today. The first one may be a familiar story you may have seen if you've ever been to youtube.com, Dancing Matt. And Dancing Matt was a programmer, in video game programmer, who took 6 months off of his job and went around the world shooting pictures of himself doing a funky dance in various locations just as a keepsake. Those videos started to get passed along from friend to friend until they turned into millions of views on YouTube and other video sites. Well, Matt is on the road again, and he's turned this funky dance into a sponsorship with Stride Gum, and they're funding yet another trip for Dancing Matt. Also, in case you haven't seen it, in case you're the one who didn't, I'll put one of his videos on the website at amateurtraveler.com. And the second news story you may have already seen on the blog at amateurtraveler.com. If you've ever had trouble with red tape, you might enjoy the fact that even Bill Gates got denied a visa recently from the Nigerian government. And they denied him a visa because they required proof that he would not reside in Nigeria indefinitely, causing a strain on social services and a general nuisance for immigration. Fortunately, the world's richest man was able to convince them that he wasn't trying to go on the government dole. I'd like to welcome to the show Jason and Janie, who've come to talk to us about a recent trip to Barbados. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. We're glad to be here.
So, first of all, why Barbados? Why did you pick Barbados of all places to go?
Janie and I had talked about taking a vacation, and we had about a week, and we knew we wanted to go someplace that we had never gone before. And I was supposed to surprise her, and we'll get to that story in a little while. But so I started looking at places that we could get to, and we'd been to Europe a couple of times, but hadn't really done a lot a little bit closer. And I just started looking around and started eliminating places, and eventually came down to Barbados and St. Lucia. I actually managed to find us a frequent flyer deal for the same amount of miles as it would take to fly anywhere in the contiguous 48 states. So I figured frequent flyer mile deal would be good enough for us. And so it looked like a neat place. I looked it up some of the boards. It seemed like everyone really enjoyed where they were. So that's why we did.
Okay. And then let's just to be clear for anybody who doesn't know where Barbados is on the map, we're talking about in the Caribbean. Well, actually, technically, I guess in the Atlantic, but in the Lesser Antilles. So the westernmost of the islands down there in the Caribbean.
Yes, it's got Atlantic and Caribbean coastlines. So the east and the north are considered Atlantic shoreline, and the south and the west are considered Caribbean. And you can really tell the difference in the beaches, too, because the beaches on the Caribbean side are nice and warm and gentle, and then the beaches on the Atlantic side are very rough, and the water is much colder.
Okay. And then you say you tried to surprise her.
Well, so this was supposed to be a big surprise. The location was. She knew that she was going to get to go on a vacation. I'd let her kind of play 20 questions. And so she had narrowed down that it was an island, that it could be reached within 10 hours of flying time, and that she needed to bring her swimsuit. We were supposed to leave on Saturday, and we're packing up Friday night. And we started talking about something, and I said, oh, I don't want to talk about that in Barbados. And I didn't even realize I'd said it until about 30 minutes later, Janie asked me, did you realize that you said where we're going? So it wound up working out well, though.
This had been a surprise for at least a month, and I knew he would feel really embarrassed and silly if he realized that he slipped the night before we left, and so I contemplated whether or not I should say anything, and finally my curiosity got the best of me.
So what stands out from your trip to Barbados?
The friendly people is probably the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was really, really impressed with the hospitality that we received, and it wasn't necessarily the, ooh, you're going to spend a lot of money with us kind of hospitality. It was genuine hospitality. It was, let us show you our island. Let us help you if you're lost.
Okay.
Everybody was just incredibly nice.
And then what style of travel did you do? Did you stay in one of the larger resorts or in someplace smaller? Or
I think as far as the island went, yeah, we stayed in one of the larger resorts. We certainly stayed in one of the more touristy areas called St. Lawrence Gap,
mm-hmm.
which is in the southern part of the island. It's not the ritzy area, but it's sort of the pseudo-economical touristy area.
We actually booked using Hotel Book because someone named Chris Christensen kept referring us to Hotel Book.
Well, I wish they were still listening here.
Free plugs. The west coast of Barbados is where the jet setters go. So Tiger Woods, when he got married on the west coast of Barbados. The southwest coast is your more touristy night spot happening place, if you can say that there is a such thing in the off season of Barbados. But it's where families tend to go. So we ran to a lot of British families who were there with their kids, their young kids, because the ones that live had older kids live in school. Even though the St. Lawrence Gap is really the nightclubby happening, lots of restaurants type of place, when we went, it wasn't that loud, that crowded, that crazy as it might be during one of their festivals or during a high holiday season. So it wound up working out fine. And we were on the far end of the St. Lawrence Gap, so we didn't really get a lot of the traffic that some of the more centralized St. Lawrence Gap places would have gotten. And now, mind you, from everything that we had read, it seemed like the St. Lawrence Gap would be this really huge happening, bustling place, and I, for some reason, had something similar to Buckhead in downtown Atlanta in my mind, and it's really not that. It's like a quarter of a mile of strip along the beach with a bunch of restaurants and a couple of nightclubs, and it's not even really that big or that packed or that crazy, because you have to remember that Barbados is 169 square miles,
right,
and it's roughly 8 by 13. It's kind of shaped like a teardrop, and even the biggest city, Bridgetown, I think only has about 100,000 people. So it's not really that packed or that crowded.
Okay. And you said you didn't go at the high season. What is the high season then?
Summer and December, I think.
Okay, summer and the Christmas
break. Kind of around the typical U.S. holidays.
Okay.
And British, too. The far end of the gap, I guess it would have been the western end of it. We were sort of on the southeast end of it. The western end of it, we were coming back from dinner one night, and we could certainly tell that at higher points in the season, it's probably really, really hopping. We could hear loud music from several of the venues right in the area converging into one as we walked along the path.
Okay. What was the biggest surprise about Barbados?
I think it's the willingness of the people to really show you their Barbados, because there's definitely the touristy things that you can do. There are people that go to the all-inclusive resorts or they go to the really high-end places on the West Coast, and they never really come off of the resort. And so we had a couple of occasions where we actually did things with the locals. One, we got invited to go to a church service, a Sunday evening revival, with a woman who had just gotten off the bus. Sunday morning, we were walking around and just kind of exploring, and we see this lady dressed up in a Sunday dress coming off the bus, walking. And we said, oh, hi, how are you? And, you know, you're dressed up. You must have come back from church. And she said, yes. And she invited us. She said, why don't you come with me to church tonight? And so we went to church. And we also went to a cricket match, just a local cricket league. The first night that we got there, we flew the flight from Charlotte to Barbados, which is about a five-hour flight. And then we got something to eat. And we'd been up most of the night, Friday night, packing, especially once Jane found out where we were going. And so we didn't get a lot of sleep. And so we planned on taking a nap and then waking up and going out. And we took a nap and we left on the television. And I woke up and it was probably 10 o'clock and the local news was on and they were saying that there was a cricket tournament. And so the next morning I went online and looked up this cricket league. And it was these real small teams that were playing in a national tournament, which I guess it would liken to maybe single-A or double-A baseball, watching a couple of local teams playing. We just decided to go, and we wound up meeting the person that ran the Barbados, or was one of the officials of the Barbados Cricket League. So we had a blast doing that. And we also went to a local independence dance competition as well. So for their Independence Day, they have dance competitions where youth dance teams get together and compete. And so we watched preliminaries and wound up sitting next to a cabinet minister. So it'd be like sitting next to Condoleezza Rice or some other cabinet level official of the United States. We were sitting right next to the Barbados equivalent in this little regional qualifier competition for kids dance groups. It was really neat. And everyone was thrilled to see us. At all of these places, because tourists normally don't go see those things. And so when we walked in, we showed a real interest in what they did in their culture. They were extremely accepting. They were very curious about us. You know, how did you stumble upon these things?
Well, that was my next question. But how did you learn about the dance competition?
We heard it on the radio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we heard it on
as
the radio.
We were driving around.
Okay.
We rented a car for a couple of days and drove into the northeastern section, which is definitely a very sparsely populated area. So Barbados has an incredibly dense population density. It's something on the order of 1,600 people per square mile. But if you go into the northeast, it's very sparse. And so we were driving around there looking at the scenery. You could only pick up one radio station, and it was a talk station focused on community events, and we heard about this dance competition. So it was in a town, and amazingly enough, there are two towns of the same name. Somehow, in a 169-square-mile island, they ran out of names. So, of course, we go to the wrong one, and we saw a group of people standing around. It was a Friday night, and I think it was teenagers standing around. So we rolled down the window, and said, where's the community hall? And they said, oh, you're in the wrong town. It's the other town. And so we drove to the other one and walked in right about as it was starting. And it was actually really neat to see.
And what is the style of dance then?
There were different styles of dance that were represented in the competition.
But they were all variations on modern dance.
Okay.
It was kind of a mix of modern dance and African themes.
Okay.
Yep.
So a lot of their Christianity, and they're predominantly Christian. There's some Rastafarian, there's some Muslim, there's a very, very small Jewish community, but they're predominantly Christian, and it's the African Christianity that they brought with them. And so there's a lot of drums, tom-tom types of drum playing and things like that, and a lot of chanting that goes on in the dancing. It's amazing to watch. I wish I was more articulate at explaining how neat it was to watch these kids. And they were a couple of little girls that were probably no older than 6 or 7 doing these really fancy, complicated, rhythmic dances in these little small dance troupes.
Hmm. You talked about going to the church and the revival. Was it a similar style of music then?
No. Well, I guess not what we're used to. We're Methodist, and this church we went to was Nazarene, which is actually, in my opinion, fairly similar to Methodist, at least when you talk about relative to other religions. But I did not recognize a single hymn that they sang.
Okay.
It was a very small congregation. I think there were about 80 people who were members of the church, but there were only about 20 to 30 people at this service. They put the hymn words up on a screen, like a little overhead projector or PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. When these 20 or 30 people sang, you would have thought it was a room of 200.
Okay.
They really sang. I mean, they sang their hearts out. And there was a tambourine on the end of each pew, and whoever was on the end just picked it up and played it with the song. And there was one organ and one guy playing the drums. But it was very, very moving.
Chris, it reminded me a lot of when you went to Tanzania.
That's what it sounded like to me. Uh-huh.
You recorded the music that was in the church that you went to. Very similar. I remember thinking while I was there, gosh, I wish I had something to record this so I could play it for Chris, because it would sound almost exactly like the church music in Tanzania.
Interesting.
And I was really surprised, given that Barbados was, up until 1966, a British colony.
Right.
Although I don't know, Tanzania may also have been a British colony, but just the geographic distance and what I would assume would be the cultural differences, yet when you get into a church and you get people who let loose, it sounded very similar, like nothing I've ever been to in any church service. It was really neat. They were all clapping. They were all into it. Their service was probably 2 hours long. It was a revival week.
Uh-huh.
At least an hour of that, if not more, was spent singing.
Hmm. And transitioning a bit, you talked about doing these sort of things where you actually got out and into the community versus the tourist things. Where were the rest of the tourists? What were they doing?
Well, first of all, they weren't there because it was an off-season.
Sure.
So a lot of the places that we went to were closed because September is the slow month. But normally, I think that the normal tourist thing to do, first of all, is do beach and water activities.
Sure.
It has mm-hmm. some gorgeous beaches, and the water is incredibly clear, and it's very calm on the south and the western part. If you're a surfer, if you go to the eastern part to Bathsheba, that's actually well known as a surfing area, and we saw a couple of people doing some surf lessons.
Okay.
So that's probably the predominant thing, is the water sports and laying out on the beach and just suntanning. There are a couple of all-inclusive resorts. I think people go into the capital, Bridgetown, to do shopping, although we found it ironic when we asked the natives, and they go by Bajan. It's spelled B-A-J-A-N, but it's called Bajan. When we asked the Bajans, where do they go for vacation, they always said that they went to Miami or New York to go shopping.
Yeah, so you never know. But there was a lot. There was snorkeling and scuba diving, and we actually did do a catamaran cruise.
Uh-huh.
A really nice catamaran cruise one of the afternoons. And they took us out not very far. We left from Bridgeport, and we went up the west little ways, not very long at all. We had two snorkeling points. The first one was where we could snorkel with sea turtles, which we did, and that was fabulous.
Right, I saw your pictures from that.
Yeah, and then the second one, there was a shipwreck.
Okay, uh-huh.
We got to snorkel there, and both places were really nice, and the catamaran company that we went with was fantastic. They fed us dinner, got to see the sunset, and...
And do you remember the name of the tour company?
Yes, we do. It was Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings, okay.
Yep, went out on a big, special-built catamaran that can carry about 40 or so people.
Mm-hmm.
It was really top-notch. Service on a catamaran sounds kind of funny, but they really did go out of their way to make sure that you were having a good time. And
okay. Now, you know two of the questions I usually ask. One is, are there any things, as you did your preparation, and obviously, Janie, you didn't get as much time to prepare here for looking up at the tour books and such, but were there any things that you were recommended to do that were a little disappointing?
Given that Janie didn't really have a big opportunity to prepare.
Yeah, but I did read. I read the books.
I think if you're not a fan of cities, then you could probably skip Bridgetown.
Okay.
The capital.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got some neat monuments, but it's really just, from what we saw, just a couple of main streets with some shopping. That's really it. I don't know that there's anything that you could get there that you couldn't get somewhere else.
Okay.
Avoid that in lieu of going out and doing some of the more natural beauty types of activities that Barbados has to offer.
Yep, and on the opposite end of that spectrum, we can tell you about one thing that I felt like was really underrated.
Okay.
For what it was, and that was the Barbados Wildlife Reserve.
Okay.
That's in the northern part of the island, and it's listed in all of the tour books, and there's a small little write-up, especially maybe being from America, you can't get a good sense of how cool this place is from the write-ups. You actually walk into a fenced area, and you're in there with the animals.
And what and kind of animals are we talking about in Barbados?
We're talking about turtles. You had to watch your step. Every step you took, or otherwise you would probably step on a turtle. There were hares that were about 2.5 feet tall.
Oh,
there
wow.
were some deer in there of all ages. There was a peacock walking around. There were several iguanas, and there were the green monkeys that Barbados is famous for. And I'm probably forgetting something.
There was a coati, A-C-O-T-I, I think is how it's spelled. It kind of looks like a dingo.
Okay.
The green monkeys are the highlight, are certainly what the draw is.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And they're free to roam around, so there's no enclosure on the top. So they usually will leave in the morning and go out into the sugarcane fields and get insects and nuts and berries and whatever else green monkeys eat. And then at 2 in the afternoon, the staff of the reserve has a feeding, so all the monkeys come back. So at about 1 or 1:30, there's this mass influx of monkeys. So we got there probably at 12 or 12:30, and we're walking around, and we're thinking that we were going to have to get a stamp so that we could come back later. And if you go and you don't see a monkey, they'll stamp you, and you can come back within, I think, the next week
okay.
for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were thinking that we were going to have to go out and get lunch and then come back. And then there's one monkey. And you look at the one monkey because it takes your attention, like, oh my goodness, there's a monkey there, and it's the first time I've seen it. I could just about fall and land on it. And then you look up, and all of a sudden, there's another 15 monkeys hanging around that you didn't even see come in. They all travel in packs, it seems like. And they're certainly wild, but they're used to human presence.
Mm-hmm.
So they just run around and play with each other and do monkey things right in front of you, and they pay you no mind. And that's really that way with all the animals. So you just get to walk around and see all these animals and see the monkeys and the iguanas and a giant python, which was in a cage, fortunately. And
alligators, which were in an enclosed area.
Okay.
But just to be that close to these animals and the sort of mutual trust, okay, I'm not going to bother you, you're not going to bother me. You know, I mean, you just won't see anything like that, I don't think, in the States. I certainly haven't, and that was really, really neat. We spent a lot more time there than we had budgeted.
Cool.
Because it was just really cool.
And are there any things that, besides the cricket match and the revival meeting and those things we've already mentioned, that the guidebooks left out completely that you discovered by talking to locals?
The one that, again, it's in the books, but it's not really, really mentioned very well, and we got encouraged to do this by talking to the locals, is to go to the Folkestone Marine Reserve, which is a cordoned-off area of the beach that you can go snorkeling in. And Barbados is surrounded by coral.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's an area where you can snorkel right on top of the coral and see some of the most colorful, amazing fish. And it's where all the locals go, too. So you get to see them all playing around in the water, and you can snorkel and see these amazing coral formations. A lot of the coral was brain coral,
uh-huh.
and then the fish were, gosh, I wouldn't even begin to be able to tell you what types of fish there were. Occasionally the sea turtles, if you're lucky, you can catch sea turtles laying eggs.
Oh, wow.
On the beach.
Okay.
We were not fortunate enough to catch them laying eggs. We did get to swim with one, but they were laying eggs on the beach that we were at. We just never caught them. And, of course, there's a big concern about the sea turtle eggs, so they want people to protect them and not disturb the sea turtles. So, yeah, the Wildlife Reserve, the Folkestone Marine Reserve, and then if you have the opportunity, if you go in the right time, the sea turtles laying the eggs, I think would be the things that the guidebooks either they don't cover or they gloss over it very quickly.
Okay. Anything stand out from cuisine, things you ate or drank in Barbados that people shouldn't miss?
There's a couple of national dishes. The national dish is flying fish, and it's the fish with the really long fin.
Mm-hmm.
that's something that they eat a lot. And if you're going to go, you should try it. And they hook it up pretty well. They have a local specialty called Puddin' in Seuss, which is a kind of a stew with some okra and boiled ham and onions and a broth, which they break out on Saturdays for special occasions. And then there's cuckoo, which is either a corn or a flour meal with okra in it. And that's what a lot of the Bajans eat kind of every day for lunch. There's also roti, R-O-T-I, which is a curry type of, it's like a curry burrito.
Hmm, okay.
I think that's common in that area of the Caribbean. So I think you can find that in some of the other islands as well, but it reflects the Indian influence in that area. You should try all those, and you'll like some, and you won't like some.
But you didn't sound like you were selling the flying fish so much.
The flying fish was not bad.
Okay.
Yeah, the cuckoo and the Puddin' in Seuss, I think I can say that I've checked the box, and Janie can say the same thing, and I don't think I'd check that box again. I did eat barracuda,
okay,
which is better me eating the barracuda than the barracuda eating me. And I was actually pleasantly surprised at how good it was. I never imagined a fish would taste gamey.
Oh, interesting.
The barracuda, to me, tastes gamey. It was still pretty good. And just the whole notion of I'm eating this fish that, you know, if I was swimming around in the wrong area of a waterway with a little minor nick, would be trying to eat me alive, you know, kind of the I have conquered you type of feeling when you eat it.
I was a little surprised in looking at the menus at the places we went, and we really didn't eat in the same place twice.
Uh-huh.
I expected the menu to be predominantly fish, and there was always at least a couple of fish dishes on the menu,
uh-huh,
but there were always also Italian dishes, American, you know, your cheeseburger and french fry option, your steak option, your pork chop option, or rib option. I was a little surprised that it wasn't predominantly fish.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, I would be surprised too. Anything else about cuisine? Otherwise, we'll move on. We'll probably start wrapping this up then.
Oh, yeah. They're coconut.
Okay.
They're coconut pies and they're coconut ice cream. So there are coconut trees everywhere on the island.
Uh-huh.
And if you want, if you're in the Northeast, you can get them to climb the tree and slice off the top with a machete. And if you're in the more touristed areas, there's usually someone dragging around a big, heavy frond of coconuts that they'll slap off the top, and you can drink the coconut water, which, again, I think I kind of feel like that's like the Puddin' in Seuss and the cuckoo, and that I've checked the box and wouldn't want to check it again. But the coconut itself, they put fresh coconut in their pies, and then the island is known for rum.
Right.
So Mount Gay rum and Malibu rum are both made in Barbados. There are sugar plantations everywhere, and so they make this brown sugar. It's a brown, thick, crystalline sugar that goes great in coffee, and it also goes great in ice cream and goes great in coconut pies. And so I must have eaten 5 or 6 coconut pies while I was there and probably drank enough coffee to where I'm still awake 3 weeks later. And the sugar is just really, because it's so fresh, and the restaurants, they'll try and give you the sugar packets, and the sugar is brown sugar from Mauritius, so don't be fooled by the sugar in the sugar packets. Ask for the Bajan sugar. It's a lot better. And then drinks-wise, of course, they're known for rum.
Sure.
We did a tour of the Mount Gay rum factory, and so we learned about all the different types of rum. And there are, instead of neighborhood pub or neighborhood bars, they have what are called rum houses.
Okay.
And usually they're just these little ramshackle tin roof types of huts that you think are going to fall in. And you go in, and you'll see lots of locals sitting around either drinking Banks beer, which is the national beer of Barbados, or drinking rum. And it's also a good way to meet the locals, because if you walk into a rum shack or a rum hut, tourists don't go there. So you're going to get the, whoa, what are you doing here, tourist, type of look, and then you get to talk to the people, which is always kind of neat. So, yeah,
and
coconut.
They're brightly painted, so you can't miss them.
Oh, okay.
These little
they're
very brightly painted.
Okay. Any final things you'd say in sort of summing up your trip here? Did you like the cricket? You didn't actually say.
Yes, we did. It's very long. It's a very, very long game.
Yeah, my understanding is no one complains about the length of a baseball game after having been to a cricket match.
Yes, I can see how that would be true. I think it's a wonderful place to go and just hang out with people and get exposed to a new, not a new culture, but, you know, get exposed to their culture. The one thing about just the geographics of the island is that even if you are in a really resorty area, you are a stone's throw away from where somebody lives.
Uh-huh.
You know, that there's not like a tourist section where you've got a mile of things that are strictly tourist. There is a lot of integration between tourists and local, and you really do get a sense of their culture no matter where you stay or where you go.
Okay.
One of the things I'd add is that Barbados is very easy to get around, both from a public transportation point of view, and then from if you want to rent a car, you could take the bus just about anywhere in the island. And they have kind of three forms of public transportation. There's the taxi, of course, which you'll generally get from the airport to get to where you're staying. And then you can always take one from point A to point B. There's also a very well-demarcated bus route that goes all the way around the island. And then there are minivans that are kind of like the combis or the tuk-tuks of other areas. And those are minivans that drive around, and they've got a big number stamped on the front, and they're all blasting reggae music. And they drive
very fast.
Like the Harry Potter bus in I think it was the third Harry Potter movie where they squeeze between the two cars. I think there's a regulation in Barbados that no minivan can have less than 15 people on it at any given time. So you jam yourself into this minivan, and then you hold on for dear life.
Yeah, it's definitely a white knuckle ride.
But it's incredibly cheap. To go one way from point A to point B is only 75 cents.
Wow, okay.
It's amazingly cheap. Of course, you're paying for it with the psychic cost of, you know, oh God, please don't let me get killed.
It was really only the first time that was scary. After that, it got much better.
After the second or the third time, you're sitting like a local. You're like, oh, this is no big deal. And of course, in such a small island, the average speed is probably only 25 miles an hour. And so when they go 40, it just seems like they're going at these Indy 500 speeds as they whip around traffic. But they're really not going all that fast. It's just, it's impossible to get up any good speed going anywhere in the island, because by the time you've gotten a good gust of wind behind you, you're already to the other end. So, you know, they don't go that fast. And renting a car is not that difficult. And
although navigating might be.
Yeah, there are a few main roads, and they drive on the left.
Sure.
So if you're not used to driving on the left, it can be a hair-raising experience, especially since most of them tend to drive in the middle. And the roads are usually wide enough. Once you get outside of the main populated areas, the roads are wide enough for 1.5 cars at most. That's always entertaining as you're pulling over off the side of the road, usually not of your own accord, in fear of getting run over by a local. And all of the rented cars have an H on the license plate. And so we figured that the locals know that the cars with the H on the license plate are the white-knuckled tourists who are afraid to go more than about 10 miles an hour and are easily run off the road. So they all drive like New York taxi cab drivers at you, because they know that you're a tourist and you don't know how to drive.
Funny.
There was one neat fact that I don't think we covered in the show, and that's that George Washington only went overseas one time, and that was to Barbados.
Really?
And he stayed for 3 months.
When he was a young man, a couple of pictures.
At the George Washington House. Yeah, he just stayed there, and Barbados was colonized by the Brits. And
sure.
Early on, they discovered that they could grow sugar there.
Right.
And so they built these huge sugar plantations. They had really colonized Barbados before the United States became colonized. And
uh-huh.
So when the United States started getting bigger and they wanted to do more plantation types of activities, they didn't have any skills. None of the U.S. colonists really knew how to run a big plantation. And so they would bring over the people that ran the plantations in Barbados to help the people in the United States to run the plantations.
Interesting.
And so George Washington came down, and that was part of what he was doing, was learning about how to really do agriculture.
Huh. I did not know that. Now, I did know what Barbados means, which we didn't talk about.
It means bearded tree or
Well, it means bearded ones, the bearded ones, and
yeah,
we
bearded ones.
We don't know what was bearded, whether it was the trees they were talking about or the natives or what exactly they were saying when they said the island of the Barbados, the island of the bearded ones.
Well, there is a tree there called the bearded fig.
Right, and so some people think that that's where it's come from. But there are three conflicting stories.
I think the one that's most commonly accepted by the Bajans is the bearded fig.
Ah, okay. Good to know.
Big tree, and it's this huge, gorgeous, it's kind of like a bigger version of a weeping willow with a bigger trunk, and it's literally big enough and got enough overhead cover that we were in the Andromeda Gardens, which is their kind of national garden, walking around, and it started to rain. And we were under a bearded fig, and we didn't get wet.
Okay, interesting. Huh. Well, I thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about Barbados.
Thank you.
Thank
it was you. Wonderful being on. We love your show. And for anyone that wants to go out there and spend a week or two and have a good time, and a good relaxing vacation, Barbados is definitely a good place to go.
Very nice. Thanks very much. I have one internet resource for you today, which has nothing to do with Barbados, but it's a site that caught my eye. I haven't used it yet, but it sounds interesting for business travelers. It's called PairUp at PairUp.com. It lets you share travel plans with people you trust, search for contacts at your destination, coordinate meetings activities, and receive alerts when colleagues you know are coming to town. So it's like a social network for business travelers. So you might want to check that out if you are such a person. And moving straight into news of community, I thought I'd give you some indication of what I learned from the survey that I put out on the site recently. I know not all of you certainly have filled it out. Haven't gotten that many responses yet, about 38 at the time I'm recording this. But the responses I got so far, almost 50% of you are between 30 and 39, about 13% younger than that and the rest older than that. About two-thirds of you are male and one-third female, which is actually a higher percentage of female listeners than for many other podcasts except the MommyCast and some of those type of formats. And 50% of you have a college degree and 42% of you have a graduate degree, so you tend to be a very educated bunch of people. In terms of how many trips you take per year, almost everybody takes at least two trips a year, and about 36% of you take four or more trips a year, with 5% of you living on the road. I didn't get that much surprising information when I asked about different parts of the show, except that most of you don't know about the video edition. About 70% of you did not know about the video edition that is out there. I was a little surprised about that. And many of you did not know about the iTunes version, so I may need to do something to put out some information about that. And in terms of how long you had listened, many of you are longtime listeners, and so about 45% of you had listened to 40 or more episodes, with 13% of you having listened to every episode of the Amateur Traveler podcast. And the other statistic I found interesting is about 30% of you are outside the United States. So I'll put some summary of that information on the website as well. And those of you who haven't filled out, please feel free to tell us a little more about yourself as well. I would love to hear from you. That's how we got the guests for this week. And so drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. Leave a voicemail at 408-8494-POD. Or go to the discussion boards at amateurtraveler.com/board. Or leave a comment at amateurtraveler.com. There are so many different ways to contact me, and I haven't even listed all of them. You can find much more information at amateurtraveler.com/contact. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
See one more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
the best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.